Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. As the Winter Olympics get underway in Sochi, Russia, there seems to be less talk about the athletes and games and more about security and terrorism. Sochi is in one of the more troublesome areas of the world. The State Department has issued warnings to American travelers to stay vigilant. There are also warnings of toothpaste bombs on flights to Sochi. U.S. athletes have been urged not to wear identifying clothing if they venture out of Olympic Park. And all this has put a dark cloud over this year's games. For some background on Sochi, Russia, I'm joined here in the studio by University of South Dakota History Professor Dave Burrow. He teaches Russian and Soviet history. And Dave, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you, Carl. It's good to be here.
Well, major sporting events are considered prime targets for terrorists these days. And even you can go back to 1972 with the Israeli athletes being killed in Munich. Sochi, Russia, is there anything that's especially dangerous about this area of the world that we should be concerned about?
Well, it's on the edge of the Caucasus. The Caucasus mountain range stretches from the Black Sea, which is the sea that Sochi is on, all the way to the Caspian Sea on the other side. And the Caucasus has been a site of conflict between Russia and the indigenous peoples of that region since the beginning of the 19th century, when it was conquered by Imperial Russia. And Russia's fought two wars in the Caucasus recently, one under Yeltsin after the collapse of the Soviet Union, and one that started right when Putin took over in 2000. It's been a site of multiple terrorist attacks from people from the Caucasus out into different parts of Russia. It's a site that when the Russians originally conquered it, when Imperial Russia originally conquered it, the indigenous peoples, who were called Circassians in the West, were mostly driven out. So it's a region that it has had a great deal of conflict in its existence.
Now, as far as the neighbors, what we have Chechnya, Dagestan, and Georgia, and these are all places, as you've mentioned, are quite volatile and
right.
A lot of conflict with Russia over the past couple of decades.
Right. And they're on the Chechnya and Dagestan are on the other end. So they're on the Caspian Sea end from where Sochi is. But Sochi is just north of also a region that's called Abkhazia. And that was where the Georgian war was fought in 2009, about whether this tiny state, Abkhazia, would become independent from Georgia as basically a client state of Russia. And Abkhazia is sort of a micro state. It's sort of semi – it's not officially part of Russia. It's not really part of Georgia either. It has less than 200,000 people in it as a whole. But that's just due south of where Sochi is.
Now, after Imperial Russia – took over, is that the right word?
Essentially, this
area is Sochi. What happened? This became what, sort of an area for health spas and that sort of thing?
Yeah, it was it's one of the southernmost parts of Russia. It's the Black Sea. The climate of Sochi is actually subtropical, so it's got nice beaches. It's got mountains in the background, so it's spectacularly beautiful by all accounts. I've not been there personally, but it was a place where Russians and then Soviet leaders would go to rest and recuperate. So Sochi got built up as a resort city. President Putin has a vacation home there, a pretty spectacularly large one. So most Russians associate it with being sort of like the Orlando of Russia. So that's a pattern that's existed for a couple hundred years.
And Stalin had, during World War II, this is a place where he went to.
Yeah. And it's become more important for Russians because the Crimean Peninsula into the Black Sea was another area that traditionally Russians would go to vacation. However, Khrushchev gave Crimea to Ukraine in 1954, and so that's now part of independent Ukraine. So when the Soviet Union fell apart and Ukraine became an independent country, those vacation resorts went to Ukraine and not Russia. So Sochi became even more important as a sort of vacation spot for Russians, since it was part of Russia after the collapse.
And how was How have things changed? Have they changed much since the decline of the Soviet Union in Sochi?
Well, Sochi's benefited a great deal from the rise of the oligarchs and the permission for capitalism in Russia, in that people have been able to invest and build it up. Almost all of the stuff that's been built for the Olympics has been built in the last 4 years. I mean, when Putin got the Olympics, convinced the IOC to allow the Winter Olympics in Sochi, he essentially told them, look, I'm going to spend $12 billion building everything we need. It turns out he spent $51 billion. It's not clear where all of that $51 billion went, but Sochi has been tremendously built up. And I think that Putin's long-term hope, and certainly the long-term hope of some in the Russian government, is that Sochi will become an international resort. It'll become, with these different sporting venues, become a place where people permanently can hold world competitions. Some of the World Cup games, when Russia holds the World Cup in a couple of years, are going to be held in Sochi. So I think this was a bid to turn Sochi into sort of an international resort destination.
So what happens if something, you know, there's some horrible attack or something, things don't go as smoothly as Putin would like, and the way the rest of us would hope that nothing.
Yeah, well, that's obviously the big question. Some of the Caucasus separatist groups that have carried out terrorist attacks in Russia have said at various times that they're not interested in targeting people from other countries. Some of these groups are loosely affiliated with Al-Qaeda. I think because President Putin used the International War on Terror declared by President George W. Bush to justify his own actions against different Muslim groups in the Caucasus. And so they've become affiliated with the International War on Terror, but their war is really with Russia. Their struggle is really to establish independence from Russia. And so some of these groups have said at various times that they didn't want to target athletes, or they didn't want to target the Olympics because that was not the symbol of what they were going after. Some of them have reversed course and have said that something spectacular will happen in Sochi. It's widely rumored that there are suicide bombers that moved to Sochi well before the Olympic security cordon went up and are already there. I don't have any inside information on that. I think it's going to be viewed as a failure of Russian security. It's going to be viewed as a failure by Russia if anything happens, given that all of these problems the idea that there might be terrorist attacks in Sochi in this region should have been obvious from the very beginning. So I think if anything does happen, Russia is going to take the blame for it.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking with University of South Dakota History Professor Dave Burrow for some background on Sochi, Russia, as the 2014 Winter Olympics get underway. The description of Sochi as a resort town makes it seem like this is an unlikely place for Winter Olympics.
It's a highly unlikely venue for the Winter Olympics. It has a subtropical climate. It has it's accessible to mountains, so that the skiing resorts are there have been ski resorts and places that you can go skiing, but virtually all of the other venues are being built to be cooled down. There was an excellent report on NPR the other day on the national feed about one of the American companies that builds snowmaking machines. He moved into Sochi 4 years ago. So the moment they got the Olympic bid, they hired somebody from the West to come and start building a snowmaking machine. And they're cranking out, what did he say, 64 football fields worth of snow every day right now. So the snow is almost all being artificially created for most of the venues at this point.
Why do you think and I guess this is perhaps speculation now, the International Olympic Committee chose Sochi as a place for the Games?
I think the IOC chose Sochi because President Putin did what the IOC wanted, which was flattering the IOC, which is that he wanted the Olympics to be a showcase for Russia. That's what the IOC wants to hear. One of the reasons the IOC, which may seem counterintuitive to most Americans, but one of the reasons the IOC doesn't like holding the Olympics in the United States is it's not the entire focus of the United States doesn't become the Olympics while the Olympics are in the U.S. And so he wanted somebody who would commit to – the IOC wanted someone who would commit to having the Winter Olympics be an absolute signature event. He promised to build all of the venues that they need, which he has delivered on. And he's basically, I think, promised them what they wanted to hear, that the Olympics would be a reflection of what the IOC wanted to hear.
Have they been able to get everything built? I've been reading stories that some of the hotels are not finished, and there's stray dogs all over the place.
Yeah, there have been some. I mean, I think one of the things that's potentially really interesting about this Olympics is that this is going to be the first one where the reporters will be at the games, but also all have their Twitter feeds or other feeds that they can use to report independently on what's going on around them. I think the IOC and the Olympics try to have, and certainly its broadcast network in the United States is going to try to focus all of its attention on the athletic events themselves. But my understanding is that one of the last hotels was finished the day before the people arrived in it to get into it. I was reading Katie Baker on Grantland, who's a reporter who was there, was saying that a room next to hers, the TV hadn't been properly installed, so the Russian workmen broke into the hotel room and installed the TV. People come in and find their doors open and find that the workmen have installed more things while they were out. So apparently, a lot of the venue hotels are still in the process of being finished, even as the reporters are piling into them, and even as the games open tomorrow.
Now, in 1980, there were the games in Moscow, different time, different place. It was the USSR. The right. U.S. Boycotted those games. Is there any comparison at all here between the Sochi games and the Moscow games, or what can we learn by looking at both of these?
Well, I think it's a source of tremendous pride for Putin that the United States and world countries are here for the Winter Olympics. The Moscow games are seen as compromised even by the Russians themselves, because not everybody came. They didn't get that. They wanted the chance to show off. And they didn't get it. So because of the large number of countries participating in the games, and because the U.S. is there competing on Russian soil, that's sort of the specter of the past Olympics, I think. I don't think the boycott because of the collapse of the Soviet Union, the politics and other things have changed so completely. But I think Putin and others who are really vested in the games view this as a chance to show off that they didn't get in 1980.
So, given sort of the backstory that we're hearing here, the security concerns, it sounds like Putin and the Russians took a big gamble here.
They did. I think it's widely regarded as a bid by Putin to put Russia more prominently on the world stage. Obviously. There have been a number of the anti-homosexual propaganda law that was passed last year that nobody knows whether this is true, but he's announced that athletes affiliated with the games won't be arrested for violating that law, but no one is quite certain about that. The release of political prisoners, the release of Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who had been in prison for some time, the release of the members of Pussy Riot, who are now in the United States. They were on Stephen Colbert the other day. They're appearing at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace today.
They're on Morning Edition today.
Yeah. And the fact that he is, if we were talking about Brezhnev, we would talk about this as a charm offensive, right? That if this were a Cold War period, this was what the Soviet leaders used to do right before you had U.S. leaders over for a summit, is you release some political prisoners and you did things to indicate that you were warming up. And so this is, Putin is not noted for his internationally for his charm, but his shirtlessness, yes, his charm, no. But this is I think all of this is part of the effort to get people to think well of Russia, which some people see as misguided, and others think is Putin's bid for a lasting international legacy, since he's pretty much seems to have secured whatever he's going to do in Russia. He has really no effective domestic opposition at this point. So over time, hopefully some will build up, but.
So this gives us some interesting insight into what's happening in Russia and Putin's point of view as far as how they want to be seen as a as a major superpower again?
Yeah, I think so. He wants to be treated as a major player, right? He wants this was part of the wrangling over over blocking actions in Syria and elsewhere. He wants Russia to always be consulted by the United States and other powers to find out what Russia's interests are, and he wants Russia's interests in the international scene to always be respected.
And in the end, how concerned should everyone be regarding any security and possible terrorist attacks?
I don't know. Obviously, security at Olympic venues is always high. There was the bombing in Atlanta in 1996. There was the Israeli execution of the Israeli athletes that you referred to. So obviously, tragedy has struck the Olympics before. The Russians are putting forward a major effort, at least visibly, with checkpoints and passports and various controls and everything to do what they can. But, I don't know. I think it's impossible to say.
Well, Dave, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday and let us know a little bit more about Sochi and the history there.
You're welcome, Carl. Thanks for asking me.
Dave Burrow is a history professor at the University of South Dakota in Vermilion, where he teaches Russian and Soviet history. The opening ceremony for the 2014 Sochi Winter Olympics is tomorrow.